Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Lisa Burke Show here in RTL in Luxembourg. Delighted to be with you once more. And I'm joined by Sasha Keogh. Always lovely to have you with me. And we've got Jeff Thompson in the studio as well, a stalwart on the Luxembourg media scene and much more besides. We'll chat to you in just a minute. But I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who's written to me about new ideas that we could put on the show. I always love hearing from you. And also if I bump into you around the streets of Luxembourg or elsewhere, it's really, really nice to hear from you as well and to hear your ideas and feedback on the show. I'm always open to that. Sasha, we're going to start with news and then we're going to move on to Jeff Thompson, who has released a documentary, and we will come to that as well. I know that film is a passion of yours. We know that you are behind the British and Irish Film Festival here in Luxembourg. You're behind the Chronicle here in Luxembourg. You're a jam maker, a bird watcher. So we'll come to many things, Jeff, but we're going to start with a focus on the news. And Sasha, this is your bread and butter. You immerse yourself in it every morning. Do you manage to escape the weekends?
I do. I do quite a lot of escaping from the news because like all of us, actually, you it's addictive, isn't it? Mm. And you find yourself doom scrolling, you know, like everybody else. And I meet so many people who say, oh, do you know what? I'm just having to switch off. Mm-hmm. And I think you do and find, you know, that reading books helps as well, because just always keeping up to date doesn't actually make you any more informed, does it? And but. Yeah, there's always a lot of news around, and you know as you say, that's our bread and butter.
It is. I, on the point of books, I just want to say that I've just finished listening to, because I get through more books on Audible, Joanna Miller's The Eights, which is a really, I loved it. It's a book about four women who are the first year to be matriculated at Oxford University. But what is interesting is that the scene is at the end of the First World War, and really it has the male side and the female side, and it's just a fascinating part of history, in fact.
So they were very unusual that they went to university. And talking of strong women, I'm just reading a biography of Cleopatra. So there we go. We're obviously...
There we go. Yes, there exactly. We go. So you'll have to share that with us as well. Now, back to the news.
Yes.
Well, we have to start, I guess, with what's happened in Iran.
Yes. So, I mean, this is obviously a developing story.
And we have to say we're recording this on Friday afternoon in Luxembourg time, just in case anything else happens by the time this goes out.
Which I think, I think it will, you know. So Israel attacked Iran last night, so on Thursday night, and it was a major series of attacks across Iran, specifically targeting Iran's nuclear program. Also, their leading scientists and missile facilities. So, it was a really, really big attack that didn't come as a surprise. Trump on Monday was saying he thought it was imminent. But very interestingly, Israel seems to have gone it alone. So without US support, which was very much what the Secretary of State Marco Rubio said, and warned Iran against targeting American interests in the Middle East. Iran has already retaliated with drone attacks, which haven't succeeded because, as we know, Israel has this Golden Dome protection. But, you know, the world is very, very anxious. You know, everybody, every news bulletin you watch, every expert is talking about it. I heard Grossi, who leads the IAEA, mm-hmm. Warning. Nobody's interest to attack nuclear facilities. We know that Iran is, has been building their nuclear arsenal, and not just for nuclear power. But there's so much nervousness about the whole situation in the Middle East just blowing up. There are so many countries that are involved, and it's making everybody extremely angsty, isn't it?
Yeah.
And nervous.
Yeah, anything related to the word nuclear in Middle East, it's something that would give one nightmares. We feel one step away from it, but of course the nuclear question, nobody is away from it.
Nobody's away from it. And also nobody's away from the whole situation in the Middle East at the moment. You know, Israel has declared a state of emergency. They're waiting for some sort of retaliation. And we know that, you know, whatever retaliation is, you know, Israel will go in even stronger. And, you know, with the situation in Gaza, you know, we're not even talking about Gaza now. You know, all these things are sort of moving parts in the Middle East, which I think this weekend will be very interesting. There are supposed to be talks on Sunday between the US and Iran on the nuclear program. So, you know, the warnings are, please come to some sort of agreement if we want to kind of scale this crisis down. Mm-hmm. But it does seem that there are crises absolutely everywhere at the moment.
It's interesting because just last week I had a chat with a couple of people who work in the nuclear industry from a very different perspective.
Yes.
Because nuclear power, nuclear energy is clean energy. Of course, the question mark is the longevity of what's left behind, and that goes through generations and intergenerational conversation is something we might come to in your film, Jeff. But it's a shame that nuclear gets such a bad rep for very obvious reasons when it comes to the state of the news right now.
Absolutely. I mean, countries like France have been, you know, quite smug with the whole clean energy
we've been pursuing
yeah. Because, of course, you know, nuclear energy, as you say, is quite clean. But then, yes, the dangers that we've seen in Ukraine with the Zaporizhia plant being attacked by Russia and accidents happening across the border in France, you know, that alone makes people nervous, let alone the fact that countries like Iran are obviously, the fear is that they're actually making nuclear weapons under the umbrella of following nuclear power.
Yeah. Well, let's just draw a line on that for now.
It is. I mean, it is. As we say, by the time the weekend's over, we might
something else will have happened.
Be talking in a very different scenario.
Yeah. A terrible tragedy happened in India, of course. Again, it's been headline news everywhere. It was a London-bound Air India flight, and pretty much everybody apart from one man died.
Well, yes. I mean, I think because we're always looking for the positive, there's been a lot of concentration on this one man who did survive. Because, I'll go back to the crash, but that seems to be an absolute miracle. He was in the plane. They know he was in seat 11A.
Yeah, everybody has a seat number.
Yes, and, you know, it was right by the exit door. And he actually has given an interview, which I watched from his hospital bed. I mean, he walked out of the plane injured, but okay, and he was the only surviving passenger. So it does seem like some sort of miracle. I mean, what a terrible accident. They're still trying to find out what happened. I heard that on the last stand that they found the video recorder, but they haven't found the black box yet. So there's big questions on whether it was an engine failure. It was a fairly new Boeing plane. You know, was it a pilot error? I mean, it did crash when you watch the video, you know, so quickly after takeoff and then, you know, crashed into this is even more tragic somehow into the canteen of medical students. So it was all the people on board plus a lot of people on the ground that were killed. And the scenes are really upsetting.
Yeah, it's a tragic story with that one spark of a miracle in it that gives me goosebumps when I think about it. And I think of his picture lying there in the hospital bed. And he was a British citizen, actually, as well.
Yes, he is, yeah.
Yeah. Now, in Luxembourg, we've got a number of stories that have happened this week. We have a big controversy story, and this came with Emily Boland, who's been on the show to talk about her fashion and her work in the fashion industry. And because of her beauty as an ex-Miss Luxembourg and her voice as a public figure, she has lent her face literally to the campaign against domestic violence with an image that was taken, I think, when she was in police, talking to the police about what happened with her ex-partner.
I didn't realise she'd been on the show. Mm. So, yes, the controversy is around a footballer called Gerson Rodriguez, who's a, you know, plays for the national team here in Luxembourg. And there have been two friendly matches recently against Slovenia and against Ireland. And he was, despite a domestic violence conviction, he was still chosen for the squad. Mm. When it came out, I was like, "Ooh, that's controversial." But the captain, not the captain, but the head of the Football Federation, said, you know, he's been tried. I don't want to try him again. You know, that's it. Sort of trying to draw a line under the issue. But of course, people were outraged. So the first friendly match, there was a protest, mainly led by female or women's groups and general. There were some protests at the match. And from what I understand, the banners were taken away from the protesters. Also, in a press conference where the coach explained why he had been included in the squad, one of the journalists was excluded. So it's really angered people. And then the week after, there was another protest, and he played in both these matches and apparently was booed every time he got the ball. I mean, it's all very unpleasant, but it kind of beggars belief that he was even chosen for the squad. So since these matches, the Football Federation have apologised for their handling of the whole affair. He has publicly, the footballer in question has apologised, and the sports minister has not only been very critical of the federation, but has also withdrawn some of the funding. So it's interesting. It's brought something out into the forefront. She shared her story. Yeah. His ex-partner shared her story again. She obviously had at the time, but, gave an interview, was present at the protest.
And was questioned as to whether she was doing that for marketing purposes.
Was she? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realise that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's you know, I mean, Luxembourg's a funny place in many ways. I think these issues maybe have come to the forefront more in other countries. Would you agree with me that it's quite old-fashioned in a way, that things could, you know, we'd rather sort of unpleasant things a little bit swept under the carpet. He's a very good footballer. What's your take on it, Jeff?
Yeah, it's in fact, there's three real issues here. One is the issue of domestic violence, of course. The second one is freedom of press. Mm. And there's also the issue that you hinted at as well, which is the structure and how the Football Federation operates. And like in other countries, like Ireland had that as well. So the Football Federation and other organisations, both sporting and others, over the past number of years have had to have complete revamps, not only in personnel, but in the way of thinking and the way of doing things as well.
Yeah, because the mindset was not always this. I mean, there's many stories, yes, old stories about artists who treated their partners well, despicably, even to the point of death in some instances. There's a whole podcast series on that, actually. And how one values the art today, given the knowledge we have of how they acted in the past. So many, many questions around this. But I still think Emily Boland was incredibly brave to lend her voice. Absolutely. And her photos and her face and her story to us here in Luxembourg. We have another extraordinary case here in Luxembourg, the terror trial. Luxembourg opened a terror trial in absentia against four men, one of whom we know is alive. We think the three other are dead. And this is against men accused of supporting ISIS.
Yeah, so again, this is very, very interesting because, they were accused of supporting ISIS, all four of them, but it only came out during the trial, which was actually taking place on Thursday in Luxembourg, that the prosecutors believe that three of them are dead and that they were three Luxembourg nationals and the fourth, who's a Portuguese national but had been living in Luxembourg, that they think he's in detention in Syria.
And his name has been released.
Yes, exactly. So he's called Steve Duarte. It's interesting in many ways because it's in absentia, obviously they were unable to defend themselves. But what's very interesting, I think, is how the men were radicalised. Mm. So, we're very used to this from the UK, aren't we? Is that there was obviously a lot of radicalisation done online. But there is a mosque in the south of the country that they believe could have radicalised or helped radicalise these men. And I think it's very interesting because these are, yes, quite old. You know, it's quite, happened quite a while ago because this was ISIS operations in Syria and Iraq. So I'm not quite sure of the legal process, why it took so long to get to this point now, because the Steve Duarte, the Portuguese national who's believed to be alive, he was interviewed by RTL back in 2019. Yes, exactly. So it's interesting what will happen, and they will come out with a judgment in July. But I don't for a moment think they will want to extradite this man to Luxembourg. But, you know, let's see.
Well, I was about to say a positive story, but actually even this story has implications that are, you know, ricocheting outwards because of wars on our borders. But the Schengen Agreement has celebrated 40 years after the signing, and many of the European interior ministers are meeting in Kirchberg. But of course, there were some people absent as well. And there's massive discussions about European borders right now and Europe's border as a whole, in fact. So Schengen is a positive story, but what's happening now, it's unsettled.
Yes, I think it was supposed to. I mean, it was, you know, when it was first planned, it must have been a sort of let's celebrate 40 years of Schengen. You know, it's the open borders for 450 million Europeans. You know, it's an amazing achievement. And, you know, I mean, Luxembourg tourism depends a lot on on people going to Schengen to see where it happened. And they've spent a lot of money on the original boat where the agreement was signed. It was the first Marie Astrid. And that's being revamped and been brought back into Schengen. However, as you say, because life has become very complicated, there's a big row between Germany and Luxembourg, for example, on the fact that the border is, you know, there are border guards back on the German side because the German government believes that they can help illegal migration by patrolling their borders more. And so, you know, it's interesting because he actually was missing, the German interior minister. He hasn't come to Luxembourg today. And the presidency of the EU is being held by the Polish. And the Polish interior minister made a point about the EU needing to reinforce their borders outside of Europe to stop migration and concentrate less on internal Schengen borders. So I think this is an argument between EU countries that's going to run and run while we have... Well, I'm not going to say no policy on migration, but a very inadequate policy on illegal migration.
Jeff?
Yeah, one other aspect in this, and I was yesterday evening in Schengen for the press conference. We'll be back there again tomorrow for the formal celebrations. But one of the things that's interesting as well is, apart from all this, is Ireland. Because Ireland, it's an island, it's outside the Schengen Agreement. But recently, a lot of people have been saying that Ireland could very well apply to be a member because it is missing out on the sharing of information on migrants. So there's a possibility there. Whether that will happen, I've absolutely no idea. But you're right.
And how it would be managed.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be very interesting, yes. Yeah.
Because at the moment, there are the two major issues. There's the external borders and the internal borders.
And Ireland has both.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes, it's going to be that line in the sea again, isn't it? But, argument.
Luxembourg's Minister Glodin yesterday made a sort of fairly pointed remark without mentioning Germany about internal borders as well.
Yeah. Well, again, that's going to be an ongoing story.
Ongoing story. Absolutely.
I love this last story that you have come up with. It's two young Luxembourgers, aged 21 and 23, and they're taking on the challenge to be the youngest Luxembourgers to reach the top of Mont Blanc. They're called Kevan Safavi, I think. And Ricardo Matache. I think.
Yes, I thought this was a really life-affirming story that we need at the end of a miserable news round. And that is the madness of youth, which is...
And the strength of youth.
But these guys are not experienced mountaineers. They have, in fact, I don't think ever climbed a mountain like this.
They've been in the Romanian mountains at minus 17.
Yes, so they've done a lot of survival training.
Yeah.
And yes, they were out in Romania and they're friends. And when you watch them, I mean, they're great. They've been trained. I mean, they obviously have been training in the gym, sort of. You see them on their steppers doing with heavy weights. But, you know, to climb Mont Blanc, it's really tricky. And it's 4,800 metres, you know, that they've got to climb. They want to be the youngest Luxembourgers. They have got a guide. So I was quite grateful to find that out, that they weren't just kind of setting out completely alone.
From base camp upwards.
And they're setting out on Monday. And, they've just decided to take on the challenge. And what I really liked is they said, you know, they were kind of asked, well, why are you doing this? And they're like, just because we wanted to. They haven't got really, you know, they're not raising money for any charity or anything. And they said, well, actually, we'd quite like to set an example to people just to do something. Get off your phone. They actually said it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Get off your phone and just do something when you feel like it. And you think, these are the kind of examples we all need.
It was so nice. They literally said, one of them said, to stop scrolling, get out and move. And actually, I think one is the trainer of the other.
Yes, they started as a, yes, exactly. One was training the other.
Yeah, and then he thought, well, I'll do it as well then. I'm doing the training with you. I might as well just do it.
Yeah, so I was quite glad to see them on the, you know, doing step after step after step with these heavyweights and then going running and all the rest of it. Because I was a little bit concerned about their lack of maybe mountaineering experience. But, you know, if they're super fit, I'm sure they'll be fine.
Experience with the lack of oxygen, etc. But they will, at least, like you said, they have a guide.
So I'd like to follow this story, more than some of the others.
Well, I want to get the picture of how they're going to get off the top of the mountain.
They're going to paraglide.
Exactly.
So That's their plan. I forgot to say that.
Thank you. I want those pictures.
Yes, they said if they can, they're going to paraglide down and they're going to unfurl a Luxembourgish flag and all the rest of it. So good luck to them.
I hope they know about the weather as well.
Yeah. there's a lot of sort of, but you know, in your 20s, you have this optimism, and I just think it's wonderful that they're
doing it. Good luck to both of them, and hopefully we can have a positive story, a positive outcome. I definitely want a positive outcome at the end of this.
Well, they said if they don't manage it, they're going to try again.
Excellent, that's positive already. Well, Sasha, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Now, just after this short break, I'm going to speak with Jeff Thompson.
The Lisa Burke Show.
So, Jeff, you said you're meant to be taking it more easy these days, but you're not, are you? You're still, you know, we have the Chronicle that you founded. We've got the British and Irish Film Festival. I know that you're a great bird watcher. You've introduced me to a fabulous thing, which I bought for a couple of people as gifts, actually. What is it called again?
The Bird Buddy.
Bird Buddy. But it's basically a birdhouse with a camera on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And bird feeder. Bird
feeder. Yes, bird feeder and a box, isn't it? A house, no?
Yeah, it's in the shape. Yes. There's a roof on it,
yes.
But basically it's a
camera.
It's a feeder with a camera in the back.
Exactly, which I thought, because you've shared some fabulous photos from that, and I know you're very keen on making jam as well. But we're not here to talk about any of this. We're here to talk about your documentary, and it's really about the emigration of Luxembourgers to America. And that story, I have watched it, but for those who haven't watched it, tell us about the story from your perspective and why you did it.
Okay, well, it started maybe about 15 years ago. And the then director of the Luxembourg American Cultural Society, Kevin Wester, was in Luxembourg to raise money. And he made a couple of presentations at the American Chamber, and I happened to be there reporting on those. And I basically struck up a friendship. And we found out a lot more. And I heard that they each year held a Luxembourg Fest, which intrigued me. So fast forward to last year, I thought, okay, well, this year I'm going to go out. So in the mid-1900s, which is around 180 years ago, around 60,000 to 70,000 Luxembourgers left Luxembourg.
Which we have to point out was about one third of the country's population at the time, which I was blown over by.
Yeah, that statistic is something that I recognised from looking at the figures and included in the narration. Mm. So this is all part of the story. So I decided to go out and record for a 15 or 20 minute documentary film about the Luxembourg Fest, which was the 38th one that they did. So it's been going for 38 years, longer than I've been in Luxembourg. So as soon as I...
Only just.
So I arranged a travel to be there a couple of days beforehand to talk to people, to see who I should interview, etc., etc., and a couple of days afterwards to, in case I needed to reshoot any scenes, etc. And I did, so I was thankful for that. But in the first couple of days, it became very clear, very, very quickly, that instead of just focusing on the fest itself, the four-day celebration, I needed to put it in context. So as a result of that, I did a huge amount of research, talked, like some of it I already knew. But this research primarily addressed the why people went over, when they went over, how they went over, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. And if you can just visualise it, which I still find amazing, they went over the same time as, if you watched Western films, of the wagon trails. Mm. And just conceptualising that, like there were no highways, there were no motorways, etc. It was forest. The railways.
There were no planes, obviously.
Were just being built.
They were leaving everything behind, including easy contact with family forever.
Yeah. But then you have to address, okay, well, why did they go over? And one of the reason was Luxembourg at that time was an agricultural economy. French law, Napoleonic law had come in, and that dictated or decreed that all inheritances had to be split equally. So what had been a sustainable farm split into siblings of large Catholic families, so say there were 10 siblings, a sustainable farm quickly became very unsustainable. Mm-hmm. So what would then happen is that siblings would buy each other out, and the ones that were bought out that had the cash would then go to the new world for a new life. It's also interesting that...
and they were, the land policy over there was quite different also.
Yeah, so there was the Homestead Act, and that meant that purchasing land was affordable. But if we think about it, the Midwest is where many of them went. Okay, some went down south to Arizona, some went to California, etc. But many and most of them went to the Midwest. So in Wisconsin, that is called the dairy state. And the reason for that is because of a lot of dairy farmers. So they brought, Luxembourg has brought their agriculture know-how from Luxembourg to somewhere where the climate was similar to Luxembourg. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. What's lovely is this generational heritage that seems to be so important. And through the conversations and the festivals, you see that the recipes have been passed down. The Luxembourg recipes are passed down. We used to have an ambassador, an American ambassador here, who was from Wisconsin, actually. And so he spoke about this link very deeply as well. But what I love about this is the story of long time and the story of how intergenerational links and bonds matter. Did you feel that?
Yeah, very, very much so. Like being Irish, I know a lot of Americans like to claim Irish ancestry and to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but it's more than that, a lot more than that. But in the Midwest, there's a lot there from Poland. There's a lot from Germany as well. And then there's the Luxembourg community too. And they like to associate that with themselves. One of the other things that came out of this was in relation to applying for citizenship and passports, was that the age range has dropped considerably. And so a lot of younger people now are...
They want a European passport.
They want a European passport.
I wonder why.
Study.
Oh, of course.
Yep. So they'll just travel, etc.
This is true also...
A lot of it is study.
In Brazil, where there's a Luxembourg contingent, and I know you
there's
have...
There's even more.
Yeah, you have it in your documentary as well, that there's a link, and the people who are of Luxembourg heritage are also claiming back, reclaiming their Luxembourg citizenships. Also, what was striking to me is the role through the heritage bonds and the ancestry tales, the role of religion, particularly in the time when they moved over. You've got a very strong story on that one, and food. So let's start with religion.
Yeah, so the main issue was there was no Luxembourg identity, because the state of Luxembourg hadn't really been formed at that stage. So their identity was linked directly with their faith. So they brought over statues of the Madonna, etc. And there's a lovely story, well, I feel it's a lovely story, about one of the statues in the church in Ducada, which is just one of the villages next to Belgium, Wisconsin. There's also Luxembourg, Wisconsin, but Belgium, Wisconsin is primarily where most of the Luxembourgers are based. And that's where the culture is.
Let me just say that again, because it's kind of most of the Luxembourgs ended up in Belgium, Wisconsin. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so interesting that when they moved over, they brought their skill sets, they brought their heritage.
And physical statues.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what bound them together with their worship, their faith, their language as well. Now that, like everywhere, has died out or certainly weakened through the generations. But many people still living there, their grandparents spoke it on a daily basis. But it's like us here. Like I come 35 years ago from Ireland. I work in English, I socialise in English, etc. So my level of integration isn't as much. However, my children are another thing, and they speak the language, languages.
Indeed, in this country, yeah.
And I just thought, sorry, very quickly, only because I was so interested, because at the Octave, which is the religious, big religious ceremony here, not ceremony, sort of festival in Luxembourg, we had on the morning show, we had two people from, I think, Luxembourg, Wisconsin, over. And they were so interesting because they were allowed to take part in the last day of the festival. And one of them still spoke Luxembourgish. He said it's very rusty, but I can speak it with, and I do speak it to my grandparents. And that really impressed me. And the other thing was that he was related to someone in the newsroom. And I was like, oh, wow. So, you know, the ties seem so still really tight compared to most expats.
You've actually touched on two things that come up in the documentary. The Octave is mentioned, and this year is the 250th anniversary.
Oh, okay. I didn't realise. Yeah. Sorry.
No,
yes.
No. It is. Yeah. And the second thing that came up in the documentary was when people find they still have family links back here, it's the bonds, like, they magnify. Of course they magnify, because they really feel, okay, I have a homeland, I have roots. Because I think for some Americans, they know that they have roots in this country or that country, or it's quite mixed. But to find those roots, that's another story entirely.
No, exactly. But with that American group that was here recently, that was led by Kevin Wester himself, who's now not directly linked with the LACS, but he is working more with the Luxembourg Consul General, Mike Anze, who coincidentally, his group imports Luxembourgish products like the beer and cider and wine, etc. But he also organises these cultural tours, and they had a big group of 68 people that came over. And on the Saturday, they blessed the new banner. I think they had a banner from the 1800s, then they had one from 1966, and they got a new banner. And that was blessed by the Archbishop here, the Cardinal, on the Saturday morning. And they, despite the inclement weather, they did a short parade from the old Glacy Church, which is on the site of the Fiancerie tram station. And if you're at that tram stop, you can just look at the old outline of the foundations, which is really interesting. But they retrace the steps of the original Octave March. And then on the Sunday, they took part as one of the approximate 40 groups in the formal Octave procession.
Well, we should probably just throw in that the Octave procession and the Hopping Festival is a UNESCO World Cultural, identified as a World Cultural event, and therefore there are rules around protecting it, and again it just adds to the importance of cultural heritage. But again, I just want to come back to the food element, because that was such a strong theme in your documentary. And another little droplet of a fact was that Steinsel was very famous for its broad bean production.
There were so many aspects that I could have gone off in tangents.
Give us some of the highlights. That was a highlight for me.
Yeah. So within the four-day Luxembourg Fest, one of the things they normally do on the Friday mornings is to have a cultural forum. And they had Guy Tevez from the National Museum here, and he gave a two-part, a long break in the middle of it, presentation on Luxembourg's culinary traditions.
I think I need him on my show. Mm-hmm.
I think so.
And he basically gave a long rundown of recipes, tourism, menus, etc., etc. One of the things that stood out for me, possibly because I like fishing, was that the national delicacy used to be crayfish.
And it was such a delicacy, they destroyed the population.
Yeah, that's part of it.
I was going to say, I've never seen crayfish here. That's why, really.
They ate it all.
Well, they are making comeback, but actually there's some invasive species coming in now as well, which are not as welcome as the native ones. But that's another story, another tangent.
No, I like that very, very much. What were the other highlights that you picked up from the...
There's the... Chicken McNuggets?
Yes, did you know this?
No.
The recipe for Chicken McNuggets is...
Came from Luxembourg?
By a Luxembourger.
Renny Arendt.
Wow. Well, there you go. They have got big reason to be grateful to Luxembourg then.
And so there are so many snippets in that presentation. One of them that I highlighted as well was the Broad Bean Festival of Steinsel. Yeah. So just as an
which
example.
Which I've never known about.
Yeah, it's just an example of one of the many, many things that has happened here in the past that obviously don't happen now.
So why do you care about this? You're an Irishman living in Luxembourg. Why do you care about Luxembourg's heritage joined to America?
I think the answer to that, and I have been asked by other people, I think the answer to that is I like telling stories. Mm. So that's what I've been doing with Chronicle, etc. And so that's writing them down. Sometimes they're pictorial with a picture gallery, etc. And creating something for a different medium, seeing it on the big screen, which the first time you see it in front of an audience is the most terrifying thing you can ever do in your life. Take it from me. But it's, to me, it was just telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, it's linked to your love and passion for films.
Yeah, so I've been on like one of the other sides of that by organising the British and Irish Film Festival in Luxembourg for, now this is the 16th year, so it's been going quite a few years ago. So like knowing a lot of the film production industry, the distributors, the cinemas, etc., that's certainly helped me in this to understand how it's done. But film production and film distribution are two completely different things. And it was just interesting just to start with the concept and run with it myself and see what I could do. And you saw the output.
It
was a 40-minute documentary.
I was surprised you didn't narrate it.
No, it wouldn't have been right. Well, at least I felt it wouldn't have been right to me. I wanted an American voice. I wanted an American voice who could pronounce some of the Luxembourgish words in it. So I approached Wendy Wynn, who's from Ohio, which is not too far from Wisconsin. And she's on our radio. And I thought, well, she's got the radio voice. She's used to speaking. And that would be very appropriate. And I'm really, really delighted with the result.
And she's a lovely person as well. Now, I wanted to bring it back then just to the idea of this long time. And the reason long time is in my mind is because I'm listening to a podcast series on long time. And I love the concept of that because it's about legacy in a different way. And it's about the fact that we are just a blip on Earth. And if we can think about, I actually, I'm very interested in it for many reasons. The state of the world is so awful at the moment. And one of the concepts with long time is that there are certain tribes of people in the world who think ancestrally, and they think, I mean, she actually says Native American people, the people first in America, they think in seven generations in the future. And that's what they're thinking whenever they make a decision. And it feels like in our world right now, many people are not thinking of that. They're not thinking of long time. And so what was lovely here in the documentary is you highlighted the importance of that. Even if we are thinking about people whose names we don't know in our past, our ancestors we have never heard of before. But the fact that you have this sense of belonging to a story of long time, I think that was very powerful to me.
One of the other things directly linked with that was what Mike Ansay, the Honorary Consul, was saying, is it's all about families.
Yeah, he did say that, yeah. Which is why when they find the link back to somebody in the newsroom or wherever else in Luxembourg, that's when everything expands and the connection is just really, really magnified.
Yeah, completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fully agree with that. But overall, it was great to be able to record this, work with technicians on the editing, the post-production process, and just putting all the pieces of the jigsaw together. And a lot of work. But
for somebody who's meant to be vaguely retired.
We won't talk about that.
And then the other thing I wanted to, apart from families, the other idea, and again, you mentioned the Octave Festival, the concept that marking time on an annual basis with festivals, with, I mean, we can think about it in whatever era of time, we've got the May parades, even here in Luxembourg. And I took photos of this May parade with all of the leaves and everything. I sent it to my family. My mother said to me, oh, I used to do that as a child in Ireland. I had no concept she did this as a child in Ireland. So it's just the idea of these annual events and festivals and how bonding they are with a community and again, through one's family and intergenerationally and now intercontinentally.
It just shows you how important tradition is. Mm. So there's a lot of people that are wanting change, but there's a lot of people that are traditionalists. So surely it's a blend of both in going forward. Keep some of the traditions, but maybe adapt them for the sort of local and modern look at things.
Well, I'm going to swerve the conversation somewhat, Jeff, because you are moving towards a new chapter in your life, which is meant to be sort of retirement. How does one retire well?
Probably the short answer to that is by keep meeting people and being busy. It is so difficult to go from being busy 9 to 5, 5 days a week or more quite often, in Luxembourg is a lot more than that, to doing nothing, to having an empty diary. And it's not just a case of meeting people for lunch, not just a case of going on longer or more holidays, etc. You need something, I believe, to keep you busy, to keep your mind active as well.
Yeah, I think you're doing it marvellously well. And I know that Sasha is a wonderful gardener as well and a great chef. And you are also very keen on cooking. So give us some recipes. Just as we head into summertime, I know the wild strawberries are out in the forests. I collect them as I go. And I know that you're a keen gardener as well.
Yeah, cooking is not necessarily what I do. I can prepare a couple of dishes, etc., and I do make the jam. But that comes directly from the garden. Mm. So I like to grow the fruit. The greenhouse now has certainly got a lot of chilies and aubergines now, trying for the second year this year, sort of cucumbers, chilies, tomatoes, etc. So
the Luxembourg soil is good for what? You're in the Moselle region, Sasha.
Well, yes, my issue is that whatever I grow, I gets eaten by slugs. I've rather gone off.
Oh, yes.
Growing vegetables.
Eggshells. Eggshells, broken eggshells.
Yes, I've tried that. My slugs are really persistent.
She's got it.
Plus I have a puppy who eats anything like eggshells. So anything. So at the moment, I'm finding growing vegetables a little bit of a challenge. So I've gone off that. I'm just doing fruit.
Wait,
lots of jam. Yes, things that are off the ground slightly.
Well, Jeff, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with? When can they see this documentary?
Well, it's was on general release here in Luxembourg. Mm. We had a couple of screenings initially during the Culture Days last autumn, and then it went in general release in February and March. I'm just back a couple of weeks ago from the US, where it was screened in the Luxembourg Consulate in New York City and the Luxembourg Embassy in Washington, D.C., and going back out again in August for the 39th annual Luxembourg Fest, and I was going to have two screenings during that. In relation to other screens in Luxembourg, we don't have any planned at the moment, but I'm sure we will be able to organise something if somebody wants to put on a screening.
Well, congratulations. Do you have a newfound view of how it is to be a producer of a film?
It's it's certainly interesting, sort of being on the other side, and whether it's as the producer, the director, the writer, etc. It's a very, very interesting process. And as I said at the very beginning, it's about storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And then just let's wrap it up with a bit of an insight into the British and Irish Film Festival, which will come up later in the year. How many minutes do you give a film before you think, oh, I can't take this anymore?
It's very rare that I wouldn't see the end of a film.
Oh, that's very good, isn't it?
Better than me.
You don't watch to the end?
I don't watch many films, but that's because I don't sit down much. It's also because my TV is currently covered with a dust sheet.
Right. Yes.
One day. In my retirement. No, I love a film when I get a chance. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you very much. And thank you, Sasha, for being with us as always.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you.